Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too, ladies and gentlemen. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She is part of the backbone of Kiplinger. Right, Joan?
You bet.
Welcome back, Joan.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
It's good to have you here. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor, as I said, with Kiplinger. And Joan, Joan is, as I told you earlier in the hour, Joan, as you know, I think you know, this month is the 10th anniversary of the launching of our first website, smallbusinessadvocate.com.
But has it been 10 years?
10 years since we launched the website. And then next month is the 10th anniversary of when I started doing my radio show.
Wow.
And we're going to be celebrating that in about 3 weeks or so, 3 or 4 weeks. And the week of the 12th of November, we'll be celebrating all that week, and so we're looking forward to that. But then a year from that next January, so it would be January of 99. So we'd be now coming up on 9 years. Started doing this show with me.
Gee,
how about that?
Next January is 9 years.
This coming January, and I will be celebrating our 9th anniversary because you joined me on the show January of 99. So a little more than a year after I started on the air.
And that was about a year after I started at Kiplinger.
Yeah, and you were just a baby in those days.
I was, right.
but one of the things I wanted to tie in with all that. Is it doesn't seem that long ago, although it was probably about 7 years or so ago, that we were reporting on the price of oil at running along at $10, $11, and $12 a barrel.
Really?
One of the things we talked about, if you remember, was there was that a lot of low producing oil wells in the United States were being capped off.
Yes.
Because, I mean, these are oil
people
wells.
People couldn't make money.
Well, these are oil wells that were spent,
right.
Basically. They were pumping maybe, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 barrels a day.
Right.
And it wasn't even enough to pay for the maintenance on the electric motors.
Right.
And so we had what the report was that we were concerned that this could possibly be a, this could be maybe a, national security issue if we were capping all these wells never to be, you know, reopened,
right,
just because of that. And we actually, and if you remember, Joan, we actually were saying that probably isn't all that healthy for, in a lot of ways, for the oil to be that low, that it was probably better if oil were more like about $14, $15, or $16 a barrel. So
little did we know.
Yeah, and yesterday, here it is 7 years later or so. Yesterday, Joan, as you, I think you probably know, a barrel of petroleum, light sweet crude, yesterday went to $89 a barrel.
So we're flirting with 90.
Which is what is the magic number? What is so significant about 90, Joan?
Well, isn't that I think it's an historic high.
Well, of course, 89 is an historic dollar high.
Yeah.
But isn't 90 the number that we were saying a year or two ago? we were talking about oil being at $60 a barrel and $70, and we were all wringing our hands over that. And some people, maybe you and I were some of those people, who were saying, well, adjusted for inflation is still below the highs of the 70s.
Right, and that's what I'm saying about, is it historic? You know, at this point, if once you adjust for inflation, are we now above the 70s? I wonder. I think we might be.
I think $90 was the number.
Yeah.
That had been shown that adjusted for inflation, it needed to go to 90 to be on par with the highest that we experienced back in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, Joan, I mean,
well,
I don't,
we're there.
I don't think there's any. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we are there. And but isn't it? Aren't you? But if somebody had said to you, say 10 years ago, that we are going to be where we are with petroleum right now, what would you have said the economy would look like?
It would be tanking.
Yeah. We would have said the global economy would have been tanking, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
So why isn't it?
I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe you do.
Well, I only have an explanation for the United States. And it's an explanation that I've mentioned before that our economists have told us, like Bill Dunkelberg, who was just on the show.
Yeah.
And others, Richard DeCaser and other smart people like Steve Forbes, all of those guys have said that the reason why the higher oil prices aren't having as much of a negative impact, a defeating impact on the economy, is because that we use less petroleum per dollar of GDP, gross domestic product, than we used to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Even though we still consume more oil, and we still consume more oil than anybody on the planet,
right?
Per dollar of output, we use less of it.
Well, how did we manage to do that?
Well, by a lot of ways, Joan. And see, this is the point that I like to remind people about when they, like people like Al Gore and others who try to act like the United States has done nothing to affect our emissions. Businesses have become much more efficient in terms of the output that we produce.
Oh, okay.
Look at the automobile output standards. You know,
right.
Your automobiles are much more efficient and much more fuel efficient than they were years ago. Even the gas guzzlers
right.
are. You know, a 20 years ago, Joan, a furnace was probably no more than 65-70% efficient in terms of heat to heat. Let's say to the amount of petroleum it was using, or energy it was using. Today, furnaces are like 98% efficient.
Gee.
The new ones are.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. And so you ripple that through all the different things that we do.
Right.
And I'm not trying to say $90 a barrel is not a choke factor.
You know,
it's not a blink level. But it's just interesting to see that we're not, that's not having more of an effect. Quick break, stand by. 20 after, Joan Pride and I will be right back. Stay with us. SmallBusinessAdvocate.com, which is where you can find the show and the archives and the articles and the Brain Trust members, and subscribe to my newsletter and check out our blog. I don't know of any small business sites out there that have as much information, as much content for small businesses as we do, especially for free. If you can get there, we'll let you come on in and hang out with us. And of course, also check out our knowledge base, askjim.biz. Check that out. That's where you can go to get small business answers now. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, as if we didn't have enough challenges with the high price of oil, we got a new Stalin Jr. happening in Russia. I think Vladimir Putin, and I when I heard his name the first time, I thought, you know what, this guy's going to be a problem. With a name like that, you got to have a surly attitude. You know.
Even when I thought it was Putin, I didn't like it.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah.
So I said, you know, with anybody with a name like that, this can't be good. And so he's turned out that every day that goes by, he acts more and more not so much like the Soviets, but more like an individual dictator, doesn't he?
Oh, he sure. Well, yeah, he always has, and it's getting worse.
I mean, I hate to use the word Stalin, because Stalin killed you know, tens of millions of people, starved them to death, or had them killed. I mean, I mean, there is no greater mass murderer in the history of mankind, probably than Stalin.
Except maybe Hitler.
Well, no, Stalin killed more people than Hitler did.
No kidding.
Oh yeah, no. Oh yes, Hitler killed. I mean, as horrible as he was, Hitler killed maybe, you know, 6 million people. Not that that's an atrocious number, but my point is compared. Stalin may have killed 20 million people.
Gee.
Yeah, over. But Hitler did his killings over, you know, like about a 7 or 8 year period. Stalin killed 20 million people over probably about a 15 year period, 20 year period.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was still killing.
About the same rate.
He was still killing people into the '50s.
That's unbelievable.
And so. But this guy Putin, he the things that he's doing, Joan, is a little scary, isn't it?
Well, right, and they call him the president, but he's not a president like you have in the United States, or even a prime minister you have in Great Britain. He's going to end up being president for life at this point, no matter what his title is. He's still going to be the supreme ruler, I think.
He keeps manipulating the rules over there, doesn't he?
Well, now he's figured out a way. See, he has to step down as president. Now he's figured out a way.
They've got term limits over there, don't they?
Right, but he's figured out a way to become, I think it's prime minister.
Yeah.
And it would be, you know, it would be like Bush saying, "I think I'm going to be Speaker of the House now," and just grabbing that position.
And giving the Speaker of the House a higher position than it has now.
Yeah, paying off the current Speaker. Right, exactly.
Yeah, and so or running again as Vice President, and getting elected, you know,
Do that under the Constitution. Well,
I guess you're
anything
right.
We're talking about,
but
that's the point. We have a Constitution,
but,
really.
But Putin is he's basically playing fast and loose with their whatever they have I don't know if it's a Constitution or not, but they have something over there. But Joan, so here's the question that you guys answer in the letter this week: is this going to be Soviet Union too?
Well, we at least economically we say no, because capitalism is still the way they're going. Now, politically, though, I think things are going to be pretty tricky.
Well, you know, capitalism and Russia are not exactly capitalism in Russia is not exactly a capitalism that most people recognize.
No, but I think it is going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle. I just read an article about McDonald's in Russia, and the lines keep getting longer and longer and longer. People want American stuff, and they now have the money to spend on it.
One of the problems they got in Russia, apparently, big problem, is the mafia.
Yes.
The crime over there. I mean, the press. You got to take your hats off, Joan, to the people who try to operate some kind of an objective free press in Russia, because how many people have been killed over there because they reported the truth?
It's scary. They're really brave crusaders.
It was only a few months ago this year that a lady was killed. I mean, she'd been reporting. I've forgotten her name, but they just people.
Just shot her in front of her house.
Yeah, they just walk up and shoot.
Yeah, right.
Steve Forbes lost the reporter for Forbes for Russia. Was killed.
Oh, that's right.
About 3 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
And a number of other folks. I mean, this is not a G8 type environment, is it?
No, not at all.
But one of the things that's really scary, though, to me, is what's happening between Russia and Iran right now.
They're best buddies now.
Yeah. Well, and Russia, Putin is sort of rattling a little saber about warning other countries, specifically the United States and Israel, not to attack Iran about their nuclear weapons.
That's right.
And so are we potentially in a Cuban Missile Crisis type of situation right here?
Boy, you sure have to worry about
it. Could we be coming into something like that? Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Joan Pryor and I will be right back. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
To the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof is peaceful as can be.
Countryside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for hanging around with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the only thing I want to talk about with regard to Russia, you guys report that tensions are going to remain tense, but you know what? Only because Russia makes it so.
All right.
I mean, we haven't done anything except to be... We haven't done anything to make Russia be uncomfortable about us, really. I remember Mr. Bush seemed to think he could be friends with Mr. Putin. I knew he was pretty naive when he said
saw into his soul.
Yeah,
or
I was disappointed that he used that language because I was pretty sure Mr. Putin didn't have a soul.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Back when we first started getting to know him a little bit.
Right.
But this Iranian thing that's coming up, you're too young, Joan, to remember this, but I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it was a scary time.
Gee, was I even born yet? Let me think now.
But there was a triangle there. You probably were only maybe just born. And
yeah.
But Joan, there was a triangle there between Cuba and Russia, or Soviet Union, and the United States.
Yeah.
Now there's a triangle, maybe even a multifaceted, more than three issues there, in Russia, Iran, and the U.S. But you've also got other countries like North Korea and on the Russian side, the Iranian
right.
side. You've also got Israel, and so that's. I just think that we're entering a really and the whole thing is the powder keg in all this is Ahmadinejad in Iran.
Well, and it just you want to get even more scared. There's a story in the front page of the New York Times, I believe, this morning, saying that Iraq has contracted with, I believe it is. Listen to this. Are you sitting down? Iran and China to have them build nuclear power plants.
What?
For it? Yeah.
It makes me just want to throw my hands up.
I don't understand that at all.
Makes me want to just throw my hands up.
On so many different levels.
Yeah. So, you know, folks, I don't want to go around, you know, wringing my hands here, but we're entering a very dicey time, and if there ever was a time to pray for our leaders, now would be a good time, I think, on a lot of levels. Joan, let's move over and talk about the forecast for legislation. Let's quickly tick down through these. Immigration reform, you said, is DOA?
Absolutely. And DOA through next year,
yeah,
we
yeah.
think.
So no leadership there, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
The federal budget will be rolled into the omnibus bill. Tell us what that means.
What that means is Congress has not been able to finish its work on, is it 14 appropriations bills? I think it is on all of them.
How many years have we sat here?
Every single year. I remember years ago when they actually used to finish them. But when they don't finish them, whatever ones don't get done, and I think this year it's most of them, get wrapped into what they call the omnibus bill, which we call the continuing resolution. It just means financing the agencies at last year's levels.
Right, right. And then the estate tax compromise is not going to happen.
That's right. And there's still talk of one, and we still think there will be one, but, you know, Congress is like students writing term papers. They don't finish till the deadline. And the big problem you are going to have with the estate tax doesn't come for another couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean the estate tax rate keeps going down. It's going to hit zero, I think it's in 2010, but then it comes back in 2011.
Right, exactly, 100%, just like it had,
yeah,
never,
even worse
like it
than
had never been changed.
Exactly.
Which is ridiculous.
Oh, of course.
And the climate change legislation is not going to happen, and I'm actually glad about this, Joan, the climate change legislation not happening.
Oh, that it's, we say, far too controversial yet.
Well, the reason I'm glad it's not happening is not because I don't think something needs to happen, but I don't think, you know, anything the government does right now with regard to climate change would be a mistake. They're not capable of moving this fast and making anything happen that, you know, with any kind of intelligence. And so I'm glad they're not going to be able to get that done. And that issue, the climate change issue, Joan, has got to not just include cutting emissions. It's got to be, we've got to focus on changing technology.
Right.
We've got to change the way we move around.
Sure.
Not just beat up on the people who use what we have.
Yeah.
That's the problem we got there, Joan. We got some things going on with. We got some other things we're going to talk about, and we're going to do that right after these messages, folks. It's almost 20 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride and I will be right back. Here's John Cougar Mellencamp to take us out.
Beat up cars with guitars and drummers go crack, boom, bam. R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA. Yeah, yeah. Rockin' in the USA.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I always like telling you about Kiplinger's website, kiplinger.com, and that's where you can get a lot of free stuff. There's a lot of good information that they offer right there on their website. But they do have some publications that I always like to recommend as well, like the letter that Joan and I work off of every week, the Kiplinger letter, the flagship, the 84-year-old family business financial publication that's been out all these years, the Kiplinger letter. Once a week it comes out, and you can subscribe to that. You can also subscribe to their three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then they got a magazine too, right, Joan?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Which is available on newsstands, or you
That's
can
right.
make a phone call, right, Joan?
Yes, you can. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155. And you can call that to get any of the Kiplinger products.
Exactly. And tell them what you want. And don't be surprised if they don't give you a good deal. And be sure to ask them for that that 30-day free trial. Is it 30 days or 90 days, Joan?
The last I heard it was 30, but...
30 days, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can ask them about 90. Maybe they'll give it to you.
Sure.
Take the 30 if that's all they give you. And by the way, once you subscribe to the publications, that gives you access to the back of the website where you can get a lot more details on the stuff that they report on.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, something interesting has happened lately with the automobile industry. As you know, the U.S. automobile industry, the Detroit industry, as they are often called, the big three, Chrysler, Ford, and GM, have really been having some tough times being competitive against the other auto industry in the United States, which is coming in from overseas,
right,
building plants in the United States, typically across the South, to build cars. And so it's a tale of two automobile industries, really.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason the big three have been having trouble competing is because of their legacy costs, their contingent liabilities of the pensions.
Benefits.
Exactly, the pensions, the health care. So somehow GM recently figured out a way to get the unions to take all that.
Yes.
The health care especially.
Right, exactly.
And Chrysler and Ford are probably going to follow. This is a very interesting thing. It's going to be interesting to me to see how the unions, how do they handle all this? I mean, unions really, their income is their dues, right?
Right, that's right, sure.
So, you know, as automobile manufacturers become more and more automated, and as people retire and die, and they, through attrition, they can cut way the heck down on their total number of employees, where are the dues going to come from to pay for all that they've taken over?
Yeah, that I'm not real clear on. I don't really understand that.
I think the automobile companies are cutting good deals, if you want to know my long term.
Yeah,
I think they're
so.
Cutting some good deals.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how that looks, Joan. Let's move down to the bottom of the page too, Joan, and talk about something that we covered a little bit this week, and that's this employer immigration regulation issue, the no match letters. Tell us about that.
Well, as you know, I guess very recently the Department of Homeland Security proposed regulations that basically said if you're an employer and you get what's called a no-match letter from the Social Security Administration that basically says to you, you know, we've noticed that you have quite a few cases where the name and Social Security number of your employee doesn't match up. Now, this isn't if you just have one, it's if you have several. You get this no-match letter. And that was never supposed to be a punitive correspondence, but now the Department of Homeland Security was saying, was going to give companies, I believe it was 90 days, was it 90 days, to either, you know, explain the discrepancy, solve the discrepancy, or fire the worker. And and an interesting coalition developed. It wasn't just business, but it was business and Hispanic groups and unions and others said, hey, wait a minute, this isn't right, and went to court, filed a lawsuit, I believe it was in California, and a judge not just struck this down, but struck it down and put an injunction on the government so they can't, because this was supposed to go into effect in September. And you should read the decision because his language is pretty blunt as to what he thinks about all of this. He thinks it was a horrible, horrible idea. Now, you could say, well, couldn't they appeal? Well, they could, but we think that they know that this is doomed, that they're just going to try again at immigration legislation when the time is right.
This was really going to be an ugly thing for a lot of small businesses out there, Joan.
There's
no telling where this could have gone. So this is good news. This injunction is good news. Joan, we learned this week. This is you asked me earlier if I was sitting down. You need to sit down for this one. This number blew me away. How many no-match situations, how many no-match conditions, scenarios, individuals maybe we could say, how many no-matches do you think there are in the United States right now? That the Social Security Administration knows about.
Oh, I have no idea.
250 million.
Wow.
250 million.
And one of the arguments here was how many of those are errors in the database.
Right. Our contact with the NFIB this week, who was on the show? I'm trying to think of her name. Gaudio was the last name. Angela Gaudio, I think it is. Anyway, she told us that there are 200. I said, how do you have 200 in a nation of 300 million? How do you have 250 million no match letters? And you know, of course, they don't have any explanation. Beth Gaudio, by the way, my crack team has just told me is her name. She's one of the counsels, one of the legal counsels at the NFIB. She reported that. It just blew me away. So they do have a problem, Joan.
Yeah.
250 million, that's a lot of no-match letters. But it's preposterous that they obviously, but many of them have innocent explanations, and the innocent ones was also going to create problems for businesses. Tintel, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I want to do the taxes and then come back to politics, okay?
Okay.
So over on page 4, I got to read this to you folks, because I've had to read this like 4 times, and I still am having a hard time.
I know you don't believe it.
I'm having a hard time getting this processed, folks. Here it is, folks. This is what Kiplinger says. Democrats are determined to enact a cut in corporate tax rates. Joan,
well,
am I in a bizarro world or something?
Yes, you are, because I think determined was too strong a word.
But I just read it. I didn't say it.
I know, but let me explain. This was actually picked up from the Kiplinger tax letter. And in the Kiplinger tax letter, we didn't really say determined. We said they're considering it, and it's very possible that it might go through. And just the fact that a Democrat would even be considering this to me is amazing.
See, I don't have a problem with the two words, Joan. Just if in the letter it said,
well, I think it's harder to believe when you use the word determined. Yeah, yeah.
But I never heard of Democrats considering any kind of a tax cut.
Well, I mean, you should have been around in 86, so they did it in 86.
I was, Joan. I was around 86.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah. But I think they probably had some help from a president in 86.
They might have, yeah.
Yeah, I think there might have been a Republican president who helped them out with that tax cut.
Yeah, but you had a Democrat chairing the House Ways and Means Committee.
Who liked the president.
Yeah, he did.
But anyway, so Joan, I mean, you got to admit, that's but you're saying that they're going to cut corporate taxes and maybe have a broader middle class tax cut?
Well, you can imagine they want to cut middle class taxes. They've always wanted to do that, but to kind of get everybody, you know, in the room and at the table, they want to cut the top rate on corporate taxes, because the U.S. corporate tax rate, the top rate, is pretty high relative to other developed countries.
That's right.
It's higher than almost every other developed country. When you factor in state corporate taxes, we're second only to Japan.
Yeah.
And not by much.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because we all know corporations
don't
pay tax.
But you didn't know I knew that.
I did know, because you're the tax expert.
That's right.
But corporations don't pay taxes, Joan.
Oh, they don't?
No. Customers pay taxes.
Oh. But
customers pay taxes.
That's true. That's true.
So you know, and of course, Joan, it'll be interesting to see. I'll be watching very faithfully, very interested to see how the Democrats actually cut taxes. That'll be fun. That'll be fun to watch. I hope it'll be fun to watch. but Joan, I am a diehard, dyed in the wool supply sider.
I know you are.
I believe dynamic scoring works. I believe it is working. And I would like to see more tax cuts, not less. I'd like to see the tax cuts we have now made permanent and more to come. And I believe that if we did that, small businesses would flourish. The federal government would have all the money they need, not all the one they want, but all they need, and life, and you know, God would be in his heaven and all would be good.
Right. Well, you know, the federal government will never have all the money it wants.
Right, exactly. I'm not going to try to give them that. That's like,
right.
I mean, even Santa Claus couldn't pull that off.
Right.
Okay, Joan, let's move over to Hillary. What's going on with Hillary?
Well, we don't say her lead is insurmountable, but we say it's formidable. And certainly the events of the last week or two in terms of the announcement of her fundraising compared to the other candidates makes her look close to unstoppable.
Yeah, I think barring events, as Prime Minister Chamberlain said to an aide once back in the 30s, when they said he looked like he was unstoppable, and his aide said, "What could prevent you from winning?" He said, "Events, my dear boy, events.
Right, right.
Barring
right.
events, which you and I both know, there is no candidate on either side of the aisle who has more potential for events to happen than Hillary."
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Well, except for maybe Giuliani, but
I'm not saying he's not a close second, but I don't think because Giuliani doesn't have help like Hillary does.
Oh, yes, he does.
Hillary has a helper.
So does Giuliani.
His name is Bill.
Yeah, and her name is Judith.
Okay, all right. So we got maybe we got to tie it, but anyway, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see.
Right. Well, look at Howard happens. Dean. 4 years ago, was it? Was it four? Well,
that's
almost
exactly
4 years ago.
Right.
Howard Dean looked unstoppable, and then he had the shriek.
Yeah, the Dean scream.
Yeah.
And I mean, Kerry was nowhere. Kerry looked like an also ran.
Right.
Didn't he?
He sure did.
Until the Dean scream. So
yes.
You never know, folks. Events and screams.
You never know.
Events and screams could happen. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger editor. She'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.